It's time to turn down the noise and tune in to News You Can Use, the show that gives you a quick insight into the latest twists and turns in healthcare news, where every diagnosis comes with an order of side-splitting humor. Your hosts are Dr. Nick, a longtime host, innovator, and healthcare wizard who can prescribe a digital dose of innovation to cure even the most ailing operational inefficiencies, and Dr. Craig Joseph, the healthcare guru who can diagnose both patient and software glitches with equal precision, making sure hospitals run smoother than a well-oiled robot dock. So buckle up, because we're diving into the ER of excitement, the ICU of irrationality, and the waiting room of wacky wisdom. Now here's Dr. Nick and Dr. Craig.
Welcome to the month of March. I'm Dr. Nick.
And I'm Dr. Craig.
This week, we will be dissecting the latest healthcare news, unraveling the twists and turns, and making sense of some of those debacles.
Just remember, life's a lot like a breaking news story. Unpredictable, often absurd, and occasionally leaves you wondering if it's all just a cosmic prank.
This week, we'll take a look at the digital health apps and their value, and what can you do with Excel today?
And we dive into Change Health and a review of the HIMSS conference.
But first off, this week, we're going to do an all-singing, all-dancing, full-scale evaluation of the Apple Vision Plus. Craig, you got hold of one. Tell us all about it.
Well, let's be clear. First of all, there'll be no dancing or singing.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. You should be thankful for
that. I have seen that.
And it's against the law in some states. I'm going to be clear with that. I don't think I had my hands on one. I went and did a demo at the Apple store. And I would say,
hold on, how can you not have your hands on one and do a demo? That's the counterpoint there.
Well, I didn't take it from the store. No money was exchanged.
Oh, I see. So you were just in the store. So this was a store demo.
Yes, you go to the Apple store and a nice Apple, shiny Apple person, walks you through a demo. It takes about 40, 45 minutes, something like that. If you wear glasses, they have to, take your glasses and calculate whatever prescriptions there.
I'm curious. How did they do that? Did they measure your glasses? Because there are tools that will tell you what
they
your glasses
do. They
do. Okay.
They do. Yeah. They take your glasses. And I think I had uploaded or had the opportunity to upload the prescription. I think I uploaded a prescription, but they didn't use it anyway. They just said, hey, can we have your glasses? And I told them, I begged them don't take the glasses too far.
I'm just going to say, that's exactly like all these security. Let us take you through security. Speak your password. What is the last 17 digits of your most recent address? And then you speak to somebody and they say, I just need to take you through some security questions.
They do. All of that is true. But it was simple. It took about 30 seconds for the machine to come up with something, and then they sent some information to the back of the store, and then they come out with the headset. And the headset has the insert, some type of optical insert in there, because I can barely see, Dr. Nick. I can barely see. And then, they help you put the thing on. It's kind of big and
heavy, even without the battery.
Oh yeah.
The battery's, well,
the battery's separate, on your side. Yep. Yeah. Yep. The battery's just connected by a wire. It's not light. I wouldn't say it's heavy, but I only had it on for about 45 minutes. I've certainly heard about people.
Oh, that's
say
a long
that.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, about 45 minutes and they've got it ships with two different, bands that connect it to your head. There's the what I call the good looking one, which is the one that
like
I had. Yeah, that's the one that they give you to try. And then there's the realistic one, which is much more supportive, kind of goes on the back of your head and over the top of your head. And I think that's what people actually most likely actually wear when they're not walking through Midtown Manhattan with the Apple Pro on their face.
Yeah, getting run over.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully not. So I would say that I went in with a kind of a negative attitude of, I'm not going to pay you.
No,
I did.
Shocking.
I did. I'm an Apple fanboy. All right. So I generally.
Even as a fanboy.
Even as a fanboy, I went in with a negative I went in because people are like, hey, don't bring your wallet with you when you try because you might say you're not going to buy it, but it's so amazing. Okay, I had no problems in not paying $4,000 for these headset.
Driver carries no cash. He has four children and they're all in college.
Yeah, yeah, no, 100%. I think the base price is $3,500. And then you have to pay, I don't know, $100 or $150 for the optical inserts if you don't have good vision. And then you have tax. And then if you want Apple Care, whichever, and it gets well over $4,000. So I was going for the experience. It's cool. I certainly understand it for watching movies. They had an interactive thing with like dinosaurs and you could move your hands. And as you moved your hands, the dinosaur kind of followed you and, you know, was going to try and bite your hand. It was really cool. I think the coolest thing was this, I forgot what they call it, but the ability to take some of the pictures that you take with a newer iPhone or with this device, it looks like you're standing in the picture. Like when you look down, you see the ground. And when you look up, you know, you see whatever's on it. It was very cool. And I could totally see that device when it comes down in price, which I expect it will aggressively over time.
I'm sorry, you said you were an Apple fanboy and you were expecting price falling?
Well, everything, sure. Yeah, absolutely. As they figure out what they're doing, it's going to get cheaper. There's no question about it. It's going to get cheaper and it's going to get smaller and it's going to get lighter. That's how phones have gone. And I fully expect that.
Hold on a second. I still have a silverback iPhone, and that's an awful lot smaller than some of the gargantuan things.
It's also much less functional than what we have now.
No, that's true. True.
Yeah. So that, you know, the question for me, the question for me is like, if it cost half as much and was a little bit more useful, I would probably consider it.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. I think it's got its use cases, you know.
Which are?
So people are kind of looking. So I'll tell you, one person who I follow, who's a frequent podcaster who I listen to, he says it's helpful for him for when he has to write. When he writes a lot and he sits and I think he mostly dictates. So he's not actually typing and he's just trying to get some words on a page somewhere. And he's basically set his the background. So it looks like he's on the moon or it looks like he's in a log cabin or whatever it is. And so whenever he has to do this thing that he often procrastinates about, he puts his mind in that context of in that kind of mode by sitting either on the moon or in the desert somewhere. And it kind of makes him feel like this is the work that he's supposed to do because this is the only work he ever does when he's sitting on the moon. Like,
I hope my legs don't break. Walking on the moon.
Can we edit that out? Do we have the ability to not expose?
You'll only find out when this gets published.
To that. I think it's got for people who have chronic pain or who are getting chemo. I know it's being explored for that to distract you. And get you out of your body so that you can kind of concentrate on something other than the issues. Pain or nausea or those kinds of things at hand. I think it's very exciting for that. Certainly for watching and consuming media, it makes complete sense that you're not watching with someone else, right? That's the awkward part. Like we often,
I get that. I mean, I do see it. I just, the price point. I think my surprise with you is that even 2,000, you're wavering. Which
I would waver at 2,000.
That's a lot. I mean, it is. So anyway, sounds like people should go try it and see what they think. But
I would highly recommend people try it. I thought there would be a long line and a long wait. No, you can just make an appointment at the Apple store. You obviously have to have an Apple store nearby. But you can go and they walk you through it and it's fun and you get to look like an idiot and move your arms around in awkward ways. And people are probably looking at you, but you can't necessarily see them. So it's fun as long as no one is recording you and putting it on YouTube.
Oh, there's an idea.
Yeah.
Well, off you go. I've got to say I did mine a while back when they were heavier with batteries, all that kind of thing. And aside from the issue of nausea, which I think some people suffer from some of these things, not for me, but moving on. I think the big news this month has to be the Change ransomware event. We'll call it that. And, you know, I'm gonna just say straight out the gate here, if you are not sat here thinking as a business, as an individual, and hey, I've been pretty public about some of the attacks on my own sort of computer setup and bank accounts and so forth. And not going there, but for the grace of God, go I, then I think you're missing the point of, you know, this. It could have been, and you know, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of blame storming. We have lots of that in healthcare. But I think the one piece that for me is just the big shocker is, did we really put all those eggs in that single basket? Because that seems to be the big crux of this is that suddenly everything ground to a halt and we're sort of stuck with it. And it recently changed hands. So it's with a larger company that's, you know, maybe got better resources. I don't know whether that contributed or not. Who knows? But at this point, I'm looking at it and going, I got to say, shaking my head.
Yeah. Well, you know, first of all, the vast majority of the human race has never heard of Change Healthcare, right?
Right.
And the vast majority of human race who went to medical school and are practicing physicians have probably never heard of Change Healthcare. Yet, when that company went down for weeks and weeks, all of a sudden, hospitals and physicians and anyone that depended on getting money from anyone learned about Change Healthcare, even if they never interacted with them. They are a huge intermediary and make it, a significant chunk of the claims in the United States, the bills, go through them. So they come from your hospital, from your doctor's office, somehow go through them and then get routed to the payers and then the insurance companies. And then they theoretically pay. And when their systems all ground to a halt, there are other companies that do this middleman kind of action, which it's too complicated for me to understand what actually happens there, but apparently it's a needed service. I get that. To your point, they were a big, big player. And we talk about, you know, with banks, you talk about too big to fail. Well, Change Healthcare was too big to fail, and they failed.
That's right. Yeah. It wasn't a case of being able to prevent it at this point because it got taken down.
And again, whose fault was it? I don't think we know yet if it's, it's ultimately the fault of the
hackers.
I don't know, hackers, terrorists, thieves, whatever we want to call them. Obviously, it's their fault. Yet, there was some security vulnerability that they were able to hijack. It gets a little more sensitive when you look at, as you said, the company was recently, or at 2, 3, 4 years ago, recently acquired by what company? Okay, United Healthcare, which is one of, if not the biggest insurance company payer provider. Right. In the United States. And so it had been pointed out that this was actually benefiting part of their company because no one could send bills to United Healthcare.
Right.
They also, again, some bills could go
through.
But
by the way, the income was still coming in from the insurance payments,
yes.
Right?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. So this was a major deal. And especially smaller physician practices couldn't, they're today even, I think everything's back. The backlogs are still there. I don't think the backlogs have gotten rid of, but I think everything is functional, at least we talk a month later. But there are physician practices who can't make payroll. They can't make payroll because they've seen patients. They've tried to send claims to the insurance company to get paid, or at least to find out what they're allowed to bill the patient, us. And they can't send the bills. The bills won't go through to the insurance company. So the insurance company can't pay. And for, you know, larger hospitals, healthcare systems, they have resources that they can tap and money they can find, because we all know they're going to get that money. It's just, they're not getting that money in a timely fashion. And
right.
Yeah. It's a big deal. It's a
major,
big deal.
Major tragedy. But, you know, to be clear, if we go back, I'm not sure how many years, but, you know, SolarWinds, if that triggers any memories for folks, that was the underlying software that was used by millions of companies spread across most of the government, you know, including the NSA, who, you know, they specialize in this stuff. And that all sort of it was there for a long time before it was even discovered. So this is, I don't want to call it inevitable. I think that's entirely wrong. But if it does anything for you, I think it should say, boy, you should really sit up and pay attention as an individual. And unfortunately, it makes me even more paranoid than I am whenever I get anything from anybody. So much so that I'm sure I miss things at this point. But anyway, well, hopefully that resolves, but big news. HIMSS was the one of the big conferences that took place. You went. Any thoughts on how it went? I know you got your cleaning supplies when you were there, because that was the one picture I did see. I was super impressed that you got your Vanish stick to get stains out, because I'm always having to look at those on this podcast.
At first, I didn't know what you were referencing, but yes, I did have I go on an annual booth crawl. You know, there's a big exhibit hall, and by big, I mean gargantuan exhibit hall. And, you know, people are always trying to get you to come talk to them because they want to sell you stuff. And there was one booth that was giving out these little Tide pens, and the person I was with we'd never seen that before. So yeah, I was able to clean the inevitable stains I get from food that I seemingly throw at my shirts, if you ask my dry cleaning company.
I'm so pleased for you.
Yeah, thank you. I actually had one of those already, but to get a free one instead of having to pay $1.99,
it's so much better. Yes,
was really amazing. I'm going to invest that $1.99, and it's going to be worth $2.25 one day.
Put it in blockchain, or
yes, I'll put it on blockchain. I don't know even what that means, but I'll do that. I thought the HIMSS conference was good. It seemed busy. It seemed to me busier than in the past, but I know the numbers were down a bit. So the number of attendees was down significantly. But I tell you what, there were a lot of people, and everyone seemed excited. And I thought it was good. There were a lot of new exhibitors that I saw, a lot of old friends that I saw. I learned a thing or two, so it was a good conference. We'll see what happens. You know, the numbers of the economy is supposed to be really great, but the people that are buying some of these healthcare services haven't gotten the message or the memo, apparently. Yeah, I think everyone in healthcare and IT are looking forward to a brighter future. This Change Healthcare thing certainly is not helping.
Right.
Yep. But you know, we'll see where everything goes. It was a good meeting.
Well, and I think, if I recall, the timing of this was that the Peterson Health Technology Institute report that came out after the fact. It was a health technology assessment on digital diabetes management solutions. And essentially the news, I'm afraid, was not good. It essentially adds cost and delivers very little value. And I think the underlying question in there, not only for all the diabetic apps that, you know, these apps that we keep loading onto people's phones, is do any of them actually deliver, I'm not going to say any value, but sufficient value to warrant the investment? You know, if that's the case, and all credit to the authors, I think they did a pretty bang up job of, you know, reviewing that, and it didn't show the benefit. And that, you know, I feel would have impacted him certainly, because there's a lot of that digital health. That's what we talk about. That's what we see, right?
Yeah. You know, it's just to be clear, I think that, and this was theoretically, and I have no reason to doubt, an independent report where they tried to actually look at publicly available data, right? And so that's the limit. That's the good part and the bad part. So they don't have access to data that aren't published yet, or there's something that the companies are holding back. They didn't necessarily find for this set of digital, you know, apps and devices, they didn't find that they didn't help from a quality perspective. They found that they didn't save money over the long run, right? So that so that's a little different, right? It's not like, oh no, this won't help you. No, it actually might help you. But if it you know, costs $2,000 a year to the insurance company, and over time the benefit is you know, $1,000 reduction in hospitalization costs or something like that, well then it doesn't make sense financially. That's not to say that it's not helpful in some way. So yeah, it's a good thing that there are independent folks kind of doing these studies. It's certainly not great for the industry in general, or those, you know, specific companies and technologies that they looked at. The companies have pushed back, understandably, and I guess predictably, that, hey, you know, we have some data points that you don't have yet. And we have smaller studies or one-off hospitals or healthcare systems where we have shown that the costs have gone down and the quality has gone up. And I think the jury's still out. I don't think anyone's going to throw these things away, but certainly you're going to have to make your pitch a little bit more evidence-based when you're talking about some of these things to payers.
Yeah, I would say focus on ROI here. If you can't show that, it's got to raise some additional questions. So, moving on from that digital health, one of the things that strikes me is, you know, we're much like COBOL still runs the financial systems. At least that's what I'm told. Apparently, Excel is still highly prevalent and still doing amazing things. I built a full resource costing management system for hospitals that was built and sold extensively back in Excel version 2, I think it was. But apparently, you also track F1 parts. I believe that it was the Williams team that used Excel for many tens of thousands of parts and tracking what's going on. And I saw that you could build your own ChatGPT. And if you can understand a spreadsheet, then you can understand ChatGPT was the premise of this particular piece. Are you still using Excel?
Of course. I don't think I'm using it for anything as sophisticated as tracking gazillions of dollars of race equipment. But I think we all use spreadsheets. I think probably 99% of us use them for very simple and basic needs. But hey, you know, my question is, if it's not broken, why are you trying to fix it? What's the big deal? If you're able to make it in the spreadsheet and if it works, then I think that's great. I guess the big deal is, I'll answer my own question. It might break a lot, or it might not have, there might not be a way for multiple people to be in it at the same time. I don't know.
Well, what strikes me about this is we talk about it. I mean, what do we say? We say Excel. And that wasn't the original spreadsheet. I want to say it was VisiCalc, and then Lotus bought that, and it became, what was it just called? Lotus?
Was it Lotus 123 or something?
Yeah, 123. That was it. And because they put such terrible copy protection on it, nobody could, you know, it was one person in the office could use it. And that Excel came, you know, on floppy disks that people just shared around. And I want to say that that's part of the reason that they won out in that space. And nobody know, well, not nobody, but, you know, very few, nobody refers to people are still using VisiCalc or Lotus 1-2-3, which is kind of a shame because it's such a significant piece of software. But there you go.
I would like their names. I would like their names of the people that are still using this software.
Well, I will work on that for next month. Before we close, for those of you that are sci-fi buffs, as I told my friend and colleague Craig, the three-body problem that has recently been released, that was a book or actually a series of books, part one, book one is out, and I think I have to say is a fantastic sci-fi journey and exploration of all sorts of quantum physics issues and extraterrestrial life. But we don't have time to talk about it. Unfortunately, as we do each and every month, we find ourselves at the end of another episode exploring healthcare's mysteries before they become your emergencies. So until next time, I'm Dr. Nick.
And I'm Dr. Craig.